And welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related. And I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And we've got a great show for you this week. Obviously, we're going to catch up on the news and all of that, but our deep dive is entitled Social Media is a Failed Experiment. This is an article I recently wrote for Smirconish.com, and honestly, I think this is true. And hear me out on this, because I think this is an important thing to understand about the human condition and where we're at with social media. I'm not saying it's going away, but hear me out. That's what we're going to do. But as always, thank you for listening, and let's start with the news. And since this is my last show of 2022, like I finished 2021 and 2020 and 2019 and all of that, I love doing a segment on the top Google searches for 2022. Specifically, right now, the top Google searches for 2022 here in the United States. So if you're listening to me from overseas, I'm sure that you probably have different top search results, but it was very hard to find world stats from Google, but they easily published the American ones, maybe because I'm sitting here in the States. Some of these blew me away. I had no idea about all of these. And so let's start with the various lists that that Google has published for the United States. And we're going to start with the most popular searches overall here in the United States for 2022. Coming in at number one, which surprised the heck out of me, was Wordle. That's right, the online game Wordle that basically took America by storm. It's a fun game. I actually play it every day. I just don't post scores and stuff. I just play it in passing when I get a free moment. It's always fun. On top of that, the number two result was election results. Obviously, we just went through the midterm elections. That was a huge sigh of relief that it didn't melt down into anything. And so here we are. Number three is Betty White. She was 99 years old when she passed away, and she beat out Queen Elizabeth, who comes in at number four. Obviously, the world was talking about Queen Elizabeth when she died. Number five was Bob Saget. Bob Saget, the comedian, died this year as well, earlier this year. He comes in at number five of the most popular searches overall. Number six, interestingly enough, is Ukraine. And that amazes me because if you're looking at it, a game and a few deaths actually superseded a war, a literal war in Europe, to come in at number six. I think that's absolutely shocking. I was predicting when I read the headline in the article, I'm like, oh, Ukraine's got to be up there. Absolutely not. Number seven and number eight are kind of tied together. Number seven is Mega Millions. Number eight is Powerball numbers. Obviously, those go hand in hand. We saw some billion-dollar plus jackpots this year, so everybody was looking for those numbers and where to buy tickets. Number nine was Anne Heche. She also died when her car drove through basically a house, I believe, in Southern California. And interestingly enough, the coroner's report came out that said she was not high at the time. So we're going to figure that one out, or maybe not, at some point. And number 10 was Jeffrey Dahmer. That's right, the serial killer captured in the early 1990s. A Netflix release starring Evan Peters came out and essentially took Netflix by storm, skyrocketing to the number two watched Netflix show in history. It was really good, but oh man, if you don't like gruesome things or terrifying things, and they do a really good job of not like showing you the grisly details, but there's enough that it just is going to creep you out. Jeffrey Dahmer was number 10 of the most popular searches. Now, on top of that, we have the most searched people of 2022 here in the United States, with Johnny Depp at number one. His divorce to Amber Heard took a huge, huge chunk out of the media's time beginning on this year. Number two, Will Smith, the slap heard around the Oscars, I guess. Number three was Amber Heard, who was going through that contentious divorce with Johnny Depp. Number four is Antonio Brown. I don't know much on him. Number five is Carrie Lake, the basically the person that ran for governor in Arizona and lost, although
She is suing, claiming that she didn't. Take that for what it's worth. Number six is Anna Sorokin Delvey. This is a woman that apparently another Netflix series, I believe, but she also went on trial, if I recall, for masquerading as an heiress and got really deep into high society. Number seven is Chris Rock, who was slapped by Will Smith. Number two. Number eight is Andrew Tate. I don't know much about that. Number nine is Adam Levine. I believe he is a singer. I cannot remember. Was that Maroon 5? I can't remember. And number 10 is Serena Williams, who I believe retired, although her sister Venus is still playing. So those are your most searched people. I find this so interesting. I don't know if you do, but we'll keep going here, because the most searched current events for the United States were interesting, and they kind of dovetail with everything you've heard. The number one current event that was searched for was election results. We were all tuned into that midterm election, and there you go. Number two was Queen Elizabeth's passing. Number three was Ukraine. So Ukraine is one of the most searched current events, but Queen Elizabeth and the election results were apparently more interesting to Americans for 2022. Number four was Powerball numbers, obvious reasons there. Number five was Hurricane Ian that ravaged the western coast of, I believe it was the western coast of Florida. Obviously a huge thing. Number six was monkeypox, because, you know, we just got over COVID and here we are, and COVID's still around and we've got a whole bunch of other stuff. And interestingly enough, monkeypox is being changed to Mpox. So there you go. Number seven was the horrific Texas school shooting out in Uvalde, Texas. That was just heartbreaking to see that. Number eight was Will Smith at the Oscars. Number nine was the verdict in the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial, or I should say divorce. And number 10 was Roe v. Wade, the overturning of abortion rights here in America. That's right. Will Smith, Johnny Depp were more important to search than Roe v. Wade, which just blows my mind. On top of that, we have the most searched movies. I don't know if I've seen any of these. I think I've seen part of number one, which is Encanto. Number two was Thor, Love and Thunder. Number three was Top Gun Maverick. I've heard it's good. Still haven't seen it. Number four was The Batman. Number five was Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Number six was Black Adam. Number seven, Jurassic World Dominion. I think I've only seen like the first two Jurassic Parks. I did not keep up with that series. Number eight was Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. I did not see the original Black Panther. I really want to see that, though. Everybody tells me it's utterly amazing. Number nine was Morbius, which, interestingly enough, it might be directed, I now know, by a cousin of mine, Daniel Espinoza. So, Daniel, if you're out there, maybe we're related and you're listening to this. I'm not sure. And number 10 was Turning Red. Again, I think I saw parts of Encanto, but this, I'm just old. I'm just getting old. That's all this is telling me, because the most searched TV shows as well, just put it right up there. Number one is Euphoria. I believe that's like a high school coming of age drama on HBO that apparently is pretty out there. Number two is Stranger Things on Netflix, which I have seen and I did enjoy. Very nostalgia for the 80s there. Number three was The Watcher. Number four was Inventing Anna. That was the Anna Delvey Sorokin one that I mentioned before. Number five was House of the Dragon, which I believe is the follow-up to Game of Thrones. I cannot remember if it's before or after. I think it's before Game of Thrones. Don't quote me on that. Number six is Moon Knight, which I believe is on Disney Plus. Number seven is Yellowstone, which I think is on Netflix. I'm not sure. I haven't seen it. Number eight is The Summer I Turned Pretty. Have not seen that. Number nine is Obi-Wan Kenobi, I believe on Disney Plus as well, because Disney owns Star Wars. And number 10 was She-Hulk Attorney at Law. And I'm just wondering, so is that like a comic book character come to life, but like a cross between a Marvel movie and Law and Order? Like, how does that work? But She-Hulk Attorney at Law, I'm hoping it's good, because it made the top searched TV shows in the United States. That's at number 10. And the top 10 songs, again, just getting old here. The top 10 songs in the United States were We Don't Talk About Bruno by Encanto. Number two is Surface Pressure by Encanto. Number three is Jiggle Jiggle by Duke and Jones and Louis Theroux. Number four was Unholy by Sam Smith and Kim Petras. Number five is As It Was by Harry Styles. I've actually heard of that guy. Number six was Running Up That Hill by Kate Bush, the 1980s sensation, thanks to Stranger Things putting that on the map. Number seven is Glimpse of Us by Joji. Number eight is About Damn Time by Lizzo, who I've also heard of. Number nine is Anti-Hero by Taylor Swift. And Encanto rounds out the list at number 10, as well as having number one and number two. But number 10 is What Else can I do? So those were your most searched songs. I am getting old. And finally, the most searched definitions of this year. And I just find this interesting, and I hope you have not tuned out at this point, because this is what we're all searching on, if you didn't know. Number one, amazingly, the search for definition in the United States. And I'm guessing this is because of Wordle. Because that's the most searched term ever, you know, for 2020. The first one is rupee, which is obviously the Indian currency. That's a five-letter word. Number two is oligarch. Those came into prominence due to the Russian invasion. That's an incredibly wealthy and powerful political figure. Number three is cacao. Again, five-letter word. Number four is Homer. Number five is recession. Number six is canny. Number seven is foray. Number eight is trove. Number nine is saute. And number 10 is tacit. So those were your most searched everything here in the United States. Again, some of these just threw me for a loop. I'm surprised Ukraine was that low on the list of most searched terms ever, but there you go. Were you surprised? I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on this. I really didn't search for much of this, although I did search on some. On the TV and movie side, not so much. And oh, I'm getting old. There you go. That's all it is. So meet me in the park with the walkers. We'll feed the pigeons together. And there you go. So those were your most searched terms of this year, according to Google. And in Twitter news, and yes, we actually do have to talk about Twitter again. I've done this so many times on this show. This time we're talking about the Twitter files. They seriously do need discussion, but not why you think they do. And here's what's going on. And before I start, I'm going to be very clear here. This is not about the contents of the Twitter files. You can read them. You can make conclusions all you wish, you know, regarding them. You know, did they quash stuff they shouldn't have? Did they not? Is it a nothing burger? Whatever it is, that's not what we are talking about. We are talking about basically the framework of which these were released. And what I'm talking about here is the government reaction to the Twitter files, which opens up an interesting can of worms that may have been an unforeseen consequence of what happened here. Now, I'm getting this interestingly enough from TechCrunch. Writer Natasha Lomas basically had a really good article on this. She's not the only one, but I crib and paraphrase her a little bit here, and I think it's a good article if you're interested in reading more, because I take some of the relevant things, and obviously I'm going to give you my opinion here, but this is what's going on. These heavily amplified data dumps, which are the Twitter files, could basically create some issues for Twitter itself. Now, Musk's tactic of opening up its systems to external reporters could come back in the form of regulatory sanctions. And here's what's going on. Ireland's Data Protection Commission, or DPC, which is, at least for now, Twitter's lead data protection regulator in the EU or European Union, is seeking more details from Twitter about the outsider data access issue. And to quote them, the DPC has been in contact with Twitter this morning. We are engaging with Twitter on the matter to establish further details, end quote. That morning was roughly December 8th or so of 2022, just so you know where we're at. Bloomberg also reported on concerns in the EU about outsiders accessing Twitter user data, citing tweets by Facebook's former CISO, or Chief Information Security Officer, Alex Stamos, who posited publicly that a Twitter thread posted on December 8th by one of these reporters, given access by Musk, quote, should be enough for the FTC to open investigation of the consent decree, end quote. The FTC being the Federal Trade Commission here in the United States. If you didn't know, Twitter's FTC consent decree dates back to 2011 and relates to allegations that the company misrepresented the, quote, security and privacy, end quote, of user data over several years. No big surprise there. Social media has been data mining us legally and illegally forever. Twitter was already fined $150 million back in May of this year for breaching that order, but future penalties could be a lot more severe if the FTC deems that it is flagrantly breaching the terms of this agreement, and that may be it. And the signs here are foreboding, given the FTC already put Twitter on notice last month, warning that, quote, no CEO or company is above the law, end quote. This is a huge concern for Elon Musk and Twitter. Now, another consideration here is that the European Union's GDPR, or General Data Protection Regulation, which contains the legal requirements that personal data is adequately protected. Handing user data and or system access that could expose user data over to non-employees or staff, meaning these external reporters, to basically let them sift through All of this data might raise questions over whether Twitter is actually in full compliance with the GDPR's security principles. Now, there is further question to consider here on top of that, of what legal basis Twitter is relying upon to hand over non-public user data to outsiders, if indeed that is actually what is happening. And it kind of appears that it is. But as of right now, it's not clear which data exactly or how much system access Twitter is providing to its chosen outsider reporters. So it's not clear whether any non-public user data has been handed over or not. So while it has the appearance of that right now, that may not be actually the case. And that is my point. So one of the reporters given access by Twitter, journalist Barry Weiss, claimed in a tweet thread, and I quote, not quote yet, this tweet thread references four other writers associated with the publication that she founded that is going to be reporting on this data that, and I quote Barry Weiss, the authors have broad and expanding access to Twitter's files. The only condition we agreed to was that the material would first be published on Twitter, end quote. Another one of these writers, Abigail Schreier, further claimed, quote, our team was given extensive unfiltered access to Twitter's internal communication and systems, end quote. The implication there, obviously, is that they were given deep access as outsiders, as third parties, as non-employees, and the only condition was anything that they reported, they would report on Twitter first. So, for the record, both tweets lack specific detail on the kind of data that they were able to access. Twitter has also, via an employee, denied that it is providing the reporters with live access to non-public user data in response to alarm over the level of access being granted here. The company's new trust and safety lead, Ella Irwin, tweeted in the last, the last few days, this is around December 11th, December 12th or so, to claim that screenshots of an internal system view of accounts that was being shared online, seemingly showing details of the internal access provided to the outsiders by Twitter, did not depict live access to its systems. And so there you go. Did they actually violate GDPR or did they not? Meaning they're giving third parties outside access. So think about this. If I'm an EU citizen, I have rights under GDPR that nobody without my consent can see my information, especially outside of the organization. They have to publicly state that in their GDPR policy document that is publicly published, meaning they have to give me the reasons that they are storing and processing my data. I have to give them consent. There has to be a legal basis for them to be able to hold on to this kind of data for whatever that legal basis is. That has to be plain and clear. And so when they go off book and say, oh yes, we're now letting third parties in, and it doesn't have to be 1,000 third parties, it can be one single third party, in this case at least five reporters that we know of, that is obviously a huge, huge issue. And so they may be violating this. Now, here's my opinion on the situation. I don't think Elon Musk thought about that one lick. I really don't. I think he was looking to basically do what he does best, which is market and hype things up. And so he said, oh, let's dump out all of this data. I'm all for transparency. Although, interestingly enough, he's now forcing his employees to sign NDAs. So which is it? But I digress. I think he was looking at this saying, this is going to cause a stir. This is going to get in the news. This is going to keep Twitter front and center. As you know, we're rolling this out, trying to monetize this more to be more profitable, because obviously he's lost a legion of employees through firing and quittings. A lot of people have left Twitter and all of that. So I think this is kind of a publicity stunt, if you will, under the guise of politics to essentially get that there. And again, I don't care what you think about these Twitter dumps, meaning, you know, do they support the conservative side of everything is quashed? Is this a nothing burger? Is this something in between? It doesn't matter to me. The point is that the actions of Twitter by virtue of letting third parties in without express consent could be violating the law both in the United States and the EU. And you never know, maybe the Australians get involved too, saying, hey, we've got a regulation on that, or the Canadians or the South Africans or the Japanese, whoever decides also to say, hey, wait a second, they're getting access to third parties, we have a law against this. They just opened up a massive can of international legal trouble worms. And so we're going to see where this goes. But that is your Twitter news of the week. It's very interesting. And Twitter news is also, like I said, while the Twitter files have been in the news in the mainstream, you're not really hearing about the privacy aspects of this, which is why you are listening to this show, and I'll keep you informed. And in a new segment that kind of dovetails, interestingly enough, with my deep dive of the week, I'm asking the question, should 18 and under be banned from social media? And honestly, I could have done this as a deep dive as well, but I wanted to keep it concise to why I think social media is a failed experiment. But this kind of underscores what you're going to hear in my deep dive segment, so stay tuned for that. But here's what's going on and why this question came up. A lawmaker from North Texas filed a bill aimed at keeping children off of social media recently. Representative Jared Patterson's HB 896 would require social media users to be 18 years old to create an account. Now, Patterson believes that social media is harmful to children and compared it to the use of cigarettes before 1964. And to quote, "Once thought to be perfectly safe for users, social media access to minors has led to remarkable rises in self-harm, suicide, and mental health issues." He is absolutely correct on that. Now, most sites like Facebook and Instagram and Twitter require users to be at least 13 years of age to join, but don't require any proof. That is basically part of what is known here in the United States as the COPPA, or Child's Online Privacy Protection Act, that basically says you have to be 13 or older to interact with the Facebooks of the world. But there's nothing stopping a 9-year-old with access to a computer to say, oh yeah, I'm 48, you know, give me an account, because boom, you can sign right up. You're just simply saying, yes, I am, and they don't check. Now, under this bill, House Bill 896, social media sites would also be forced to verify a user's age with a photo ID and allow parents to request the removal of their child's account. And so overall, I think this might be a really good thing. I've talked about this extensively on this radio show and in my daily podcasts and videos in the past as well, just about how interesting, it is interesting, but it's also horrible, just how deleterious that social media has been to our youth. I'm going to talk about that. I'm not going to dive into it right now. I'm going to talk about that in our deep dive segment, but I think this is actually a rather important one to really consider, because we have seen just the negative mental health effects that social media has had on our young, and studies have shown that if you're over 19 and over, and then you adopt social media, you're much more well-adjusted. So hopefully that's the case. We'll see where this goes, but I'm just curious to know. Feel free to send me a message on this. Should we ban 18 and under, or under 18, I should say, so I guess 17 and under, from social media? Seems like a good idea, but I'd love to hear your thoughts. And that is your social media news of the week that is preliminary to my deep dive. And in World Cup news, and I know a lot of you are actually watching the World Cup, and I am not talking about the games, I am talking about the apps, because they are privacy nightmares. Now, here's what's going on. Privacy and data security experts are raising the alarm over two official apps required to attend the World Cup festivities. The first one is Etoraz. It is a COVID-19 tracking system, and while Hiya is an app, this is the other one that allows or not fans entrance into the stadium, scheduled viewing, and free public transportation through Doha and the other places in Qatar while this is taking place. Basically, this is spyware. Etoraz, which has been used in Qatar already, has basically asks users to allow remote access to pictures and videos, make unprompted calls, and read or modify the device. That is the permission that you are giving that app. Meanwhile, Hiya, the other one, includes full network access and unrestricted access to personal data. It also prevents the device from going into sleep mode and views the phone's network connections. Both track users' locations. This is obviously a huge, huge issue. So if you're in Qatar right now, obviously the World Cup has been going on for a few weeks now. We're in the quarterfinal to semifinal stage and all of that. And you're running these apps. I really hope you brought a burner phone. Nobody, and I mean nobody, should be using these apps on their personal device. And heads up, if you're ever traveling to Qatar in the future, make sure that you are bringing a cell phone that has been sanitized from your personal data. Otherwise, you may be giving it to a government that you don't want it to have. And so that is your World Cup news of the week. And before we head over to the next segment, I wanted to let you know, and I've done this in a couple of shows, and I keep being reminded to do this, and I always forget. Basically, if you didn't know, I put out content on a daily basis, not just here on the radio where you're listening to me, but actually I put it quite a lot of places, daily podcasts and videos on some of the latest trends, technology, cybersecurity, privacy, all these kinds of things I keep day to day. And some of the segments that I do for my news section or even my breaches of the week every Sunday gets translated into this show. But I do this as essentially a labor of love. You know, I don't have any kind of monetization anywhere. I just do it to keep people informed and to keep everybody interested. But you can find me basically on Twitter or Facebook at @NickAESP or on LinkedIn and YouTube at @NickEspinoza. And please follow me. I'd love to hear, I'd love to basically get a shout out from you and you know, send me a message or whatever it is. But I do content daily and I hope you guys enjoy it. And so that is my quick blurb.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at @NickAESP. Again, that's @NickAESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions@securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, let's begin.
And there ain't no party like a data breach party, because a data breach party don't stop ever. Man, it has been a crazy couple of weeks in data breaches as we are coming into the holiday season and everybody's taking off for Christmas and Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and Voodoo Day and whatever you believe in. This is absolutely nuts. And I had a lot of help from a lot of different people the last couple of weeks. And thank you so very much. Chris Fellon, Robert Cotterman, Aaron Lax, Jay Dance, Barrett Peterson, Jacqueline Wolf, and Bjorn Gustafson. Thank you so very much. And if, again, you have a tip for me, please send it my way. I am more than happy to do this. And next year, I think we're going to be adding more segments on basically responding to user emails and all of that. Oftentimes, I try to respond. Sometimes I get overwhelmed and all of that. But I want to start essentially, because I don't have a call-in line, just given the format of my show. But I do love hearing from people. So please, not just send me tips, just send me comments. Tell me I'm an idiot. Tell me I'm great. Whatever it is. But let's start with these data breaches. No time to lose, and let's go with Manitoba Health up in the Great White North of Canada. Now, they say a privacy breach that happened earlier, about 2 weeks ago or so, following a break-in at a facility, compromised some people's personal health information. The province said it believed personal health information and other private info of some of its clients or patients were breached, adding a very small number of instances that included social insurance numbers. So heads up, if you live in Manitoba, you might have had your info dumped.
And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.